Welcome to Base by Base, the paper cast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So to start off today's deep dive, I want you to imagine a pretty unusual scenario. Picture two heavy, solid steel, totally locked safes.
Okay, so we're visualizing fully sealed vaults here, like no way to see inside, completely impenetrable.
Yeah, exactly. That is the image to hold on to. Now consider that these two locked safes can somehow recognize that they hold the exact same contents. Like they are filled with identical stacks of documents, and they just know this without either safe ever being opened.
Wait, really? That defies microscopic physics.
Right. If they bump into each other in a dark room, they essentially sense that their contents are a match. In our everyday world, that makes zero sense. Information secured behind a steel wall can't just communicate with the outside.
No, it would require, you know, some sort of field or force radiating through the steel that perfectly reflects the ink on the paper inside.
Which totally sounds like science fiction, but this precise paradox is actually happening inside your cells right now. When we think about DNA pairing up, we usually default to visualizing single-stranded DNA.
Right, the unzipped version.
Exactly, it's unzipped, the hydrogen bonds of the nucleobases are exposed, and they pair up seamlessly based on Watson-Crick affinity. It's almost like the teeth of a zipper locking together.
Yeah, and we easily understand that mechanism because the binding sites are physically exposed.
But the crazy thing is, intact, double-stranded DNA also somehow knows when it is near a matching sequence.
And the mechanical reality of a fully formed double helix is that those information-carrying nucleobases, the actual sequence data, are buried deep inside the sugar phosphate backbone. I mean, they are locked in the safe.
So the conceptual puzzle for you listening today is, what really happens when identical stretches of intact DNA bump into each other in the chaotic, crowded environment of a cell?
Right, if the sequence is hidden, what is the physical mechanism driving this invisible recognition? And, you know, how does it change our fundamental understanding of genomic maintenance?
It's a huge question.
It really is. Today, we celebrate the work of the collaborative research team from Imperial College London, the University of Cambridge, and their partner institutions who have advanced our understanding of homologous recognition between DNA duplexes.
To set the proper context for this research, we really need to look at homologous recombination.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the ubiquitous biological process that's responsible for repairing double-strand breaks, driving chromosomal crossover during meiosis, and, well, facilitating horizontal gene transfer.
Right. Basically, the cell needs an intact, matching copy of DNA to use as a template for repair.
Exactly. But the initial challenge is spatial alignment. Before the specialized repair proteins like RECI in bacteria or RED51 in eukaryotes can actually do the complex work of unzipping the damaged DNA and swapping the strands, those two homologous stretches of DNA have to locate each other.
Out of the entire three-dimensional space of the nucleus.
Right.
And trying to read the sequence while it is locked in a double helix is, well, it's the locked safe problem. Or like trying to read a book while it's snapped shut. You just can't see the letters.
You really can't.
Wait, so couldn't the cell's repair machinery just act blindly? Like, couldn't the protein simply latch on to every piece of DNA they encounter, unzip it, check for a base pairing match, and just move on if it's wrong?
I mean, logically, you might assume that. But if we model the thermodynamics of that brute force approach, it quickly falls apart. The energetic cost of continuously melting and re-annealing the double helix just to sample for homology would be staggering.
Oh, wow. Because of all the bonds.
Yeah, unwinding DNA requires breaking multiple hydrogen bonds and overcoming favorable base stacking interactions. To do that randomly across a genome composed of millions or even billions of base pairs, well, it would consume vastly more ATP than a cell could reasonably generate.
That makes sense.
And not to mention the sheer temporal cost. A cell would likely die from the unrepaired double-strand break long before it randomly stumbled upon the correct sequence.
So it would be like a locksmith spending hours drilling into every single safe in a massive bank vault one by one, just hoping to find a specific document.
Exactly. That just doesn't work. The cell must rely on a preliminary physical sorting mechanism, There basically has to be some innate physical attraction that helps homologous double-stranded sequences align before the proteins commit to the heavy lifting of strand invasion.
Okay, so from a biological mystery to an engineering challenge. The hypothesis of protein-independent recognition has been around for a while, right?
It has, yeah.
Yeah.
But actually capturing it was an immense engineering challenge. Because if this physical attraction between closed helices is real, it inherently must be incredibly weak.
Right, because if it were a strong force, the entire genome would just spontaneously clump together into a rigid, non-functional mess.
Precisely. So measuring something that weak requires specialized tools. The researchers couldn't just, you know, throw DNA in a beaker and watch it clump.
How do you even measure a whisper in a hurricane?
Well, they needed a nanosensor capable of isolating and quantifying a microscopic whisper of a force. And they built that sensor out of DNA itself. They designed what they called DNA tweezers.
DNA tweezers, that sounds so cool.
The architecture is actually quite elegant. They synthesized a structure composed of four distinct DNA strands that self-assemble into a specific geometry. The active components are two 36 base pair double helices.
So those represent the two intact safes we want to test for recognition.
Exactly. And to keep them in proximity so they actually have a chance to interact, they connected these two 36 base pair arms with a flexible 18 base pair tether.
Okay, so the arms are bound at a pivot point. They're free to swing around, rotate, and just sort of sample the surrounding space.
Right, functioning dynamically like the arms of a tiny pair of tweezers. The tether incorporates fully flexible, single-stranded linkers at the connection points. This mechanical freedom is critical.
Because it lets them move naturally.
Yeah, it guarantees that the two rigid arms can explore all rotational and translational configurations. They can potentially align side by side without being sterically hindered by the joint itself.
But because we are dealing with nanometer-scale movements, I'm guessing optical microscopy isn't an option. We can't just look at them.
No, definitely not. To read the output of these tweezers, they deployed a FRET system that's first to resonance energy transfer.
Oh, right. For you listening, they essentially put glowing tags on the ends of the tweezers.
Exactly. They utilized a fluorescent donor molecule, specifically FAM, on the end of one arm, and a quencher or acceptor molecule, Iowa Black FQ, on the other.
And the choice of those specific molecules comes down to their spectral overlap, right?
Yes. The emission spectrum of the FAM donor perfectly overlaps with the absorption spectrum of the Iowa Black Quencher. And because Frick efficiency falls off with the sixth power of the distance between the molecules, it is an incredibly sensitive proximity sensor.
So if the tweezer arms are unaligned and just flopping around, the distance is large and the FAM tag fluoresces brightly.
Yeah, but if the intact DNA arms recognize each other and co-align, basically snapping the tweezer shut, the donor and quencher are brought within nanometers of each other.
And the light signal changes.
Exactly. The energy transfers non-radiatively, and the fluorescent signal drops sharply. It provides a highly quantifiable readout. So the researchers designed sets of tweezers where the two arms had entirely different random sequences, the heterologous controls, and tweezers where the two arms are identical. Those were the homologous test subjects.
Okay, but I have a critical question here. I would immediately question the structural integrity of those free ends.
Oh, the fraying issue.
Yeah. If you put two identical 36 base pair sequences right next to each other on a flexible tether, doesn't DNA have a thermodynamic tendency to breathe or transiently fray at the ends?
It does, yes. It's a major confounding variable.
Because if the ends fray even slightly, they could expose the single strands, initiate a localized strand exchange, and just stick together via standard Watson-Crick base pairing. How do we know they aren't just slightly unzipping at the ends and swapping strands?
That is an excellent question. And ruling out standard base pairing was the fundamental prerequisite for validating the entire study. If transient fraying led to strand exchange, the measurement would merely reflect classical single-stranded affinity, not intact double duplex recognition.
Right. So I imagine they needed a way to thermodynamically reinforce those free ends to guarantee the safes remain locked during the interaction.
They did. They engineered GC clamps at the termini of the test sequences.
GC clamps?
Yeah. They appended two base pairs composed exclusively of guanine and cytosine. Guanine and cytosine bond via three hydrogen bonds compared to just two hydrogen bonds between adenine and thymine.
Oh, wow. So that single extra hydrogen bond per pair significantly increases the local melting temperature?
Exactly. It thermodynamically seals the ends, suppressing those transient breathing motions. Furthermore, they intentionally made these two nucleotide GC clamps heterologous.
Wait, so the clamps did not match between the two arms?
Right. Therefore, even in the highly unlikely event of a transient fraying, the exposed bases would actively repel each other rather than initiate a strand swap.
That is an ingenious control mechanism. It conclusively proves that any fret signal observed was the result of strictly intact, closed duplexes interacting.
It really is brilliant. So with the experimental framework secured, the data reveals a heavy dependence on the surrounding chemical environment. When the tweezers were placed in a solution containing only monovalent cations like sodium, the F4 signal indicated the arms remained entirely open.
The intact helices simply repelled each other.
Yeah. The phosphate backbone of DNA carries a strong negative charge. In the presence of monovalent sodium, the debaby screening length, which is basically the distance over which these electrostatic charges are felt, remains large enough that the two helices experience significant electrostatic repulsion. They just push each other away.
But the dynamic shifts dramatically when introducing physiological divalent cations, right? Like magnesium or calcium.
It does. Because they carry a +2 charge, they interact much more intimately with the DNA, neutralizing that negative backbone repulsion. Once the physiological magnesium was introduced, the tweezers with the identical sequences snap shut, while the mismatched tweezers remain open.
Which is astonishing. And they quantified this, right?
They did. The quantification of this interaction provides the most critical insight. By measuring the distribution of open versus closed states, they calculated the recognition free energy.
Okay, what were the numbers?
The specific attractive force generated by the sequence homology was measured at approximately -0.01 kilocalories per mole per base pair, which translates to roughly -0.02 kilobt.
Okay, let's translate that for the listener. Putting that into perspective really highlights the delicacy of this mechanism. A standard hydrogen bond in an unzipped DNA base pair is orders of magnitude stronger.
Oh, absolutely.
This intact recognition force operates at roughly 1% of the strength of standard base pairing.
1%. It truly is a microscopic electrostatic whisper. And exploring the limits of that whisper reveals a fascinating physical constraint. The researchers tested the assumption that scaling up the interacting surface area would amplify the force.
Which is a totally reasonable logical assumption, right? Based on macroscopic physics, if the attraction per base pair is small, increasing the length of the interacting DNA from 36 base pairs to 68 base pairs should just give them more surface area to stick together.
Right, you would expect the 68 base pair tweezers to clamp shut much more aggressively, driving the MRIT signal even lower.
But that's a counterintuitive trap, isn't it?
It is. The empirical results demonstrated the exact opposite. The longer 68 base pair tweezers exhibited significantly less co-alignment than the shorter 36 base pair versions.
Wait, less? Why would longer tweezers show less alignment?
Well, it indicates we are running into the boundaries of polymer physics. It's not just a matter of adding up enthalpies. Entropy is overpowering the system. We have to consider the persistence length of DNA.
Okay, break that down for us.
At 36 base pairs, the double helix behaves essentially like a rigid rod. But as you extend the length, the polymer becomes increasingly flexible. And this flexibility is actually exacerbated by the magnesium ions, which lower the structural stiffness of the helix.
So the 68 base pair arms are no longer rigid rods. They're adopting much more complex dynamic conformations. Basically, they are wriggling.
Exactly. In thermodynamic terms, the longer DNA arms explore a massively expanded conformational space. The entropic penalty of restricting that dynamic movement just to force the two helices into perfect parallel alignment is simply too high.
So the chaotic thermal energy driving the longer arms to wriggle around easily breaks apart that delicate 1% magnetic-like attraction attempting to hold them together.
Right. It's a very delicate balance.
Okay, so we've talked about the what, but why does this happen? The mechanics of this interaction point to a highly specific physical architecture on the surface of the DNA.
Yes, and that brings us to the theoretical framework the researchers used to explain this. It's called helical coherence theory, or HCT.
Helical coherence theory.
Yeah, HCT addresses the nuanced reality of the DNA double helix. It is not a perfectly uniform, smooth cylinder.
Right.
The spatial dynamics, specifically the twist angle between adjacent base pairs and the rise or distance between them, vary slightly depending on the specific nucleobases occupying that position.
So an adenine-thymine step physically twists the backbone slightly differently than a guanine-cytosine step.
Exactly. The internal sequence subtly deforms the external geometry. Now overlay the charge distribution onto that geometry. We have the negatively charged phosphate groups outlining the helix, and the positively charged magnesium ions strongly adsorbing onto the DNA, predominantly settling into the major grooves. Because the structural twisting is sequence dependent, the three-dimensional topographical pattern of those positive and negative charges is entirely dictated by the underlying sequence.
Oh, wow. It's basically like two matching 3D barcodes made of static electricity.
That is a perfect analogy, yes.
It effectively projects the hidden sequence data onto the exterior of the lock safe. The sequence generates a highly specific three-dimensional electrostatic barcode.
Right. And if you bring two homologous sequences together, their electrostatic barcodes are identical. As the helix rotate and sample different alignments, they can lock into a phase where the positive bumps the magnesium clusters on one helix seat perfectly into the negative phosphate grooves of the other.
So the structural alignment minimizes the electrostatic repulsion and creates that slight attraction, that negative 0.01 kilocalorie force.
Yes. Conversely, if the sequences are heterologous, the sequence-dependent twist angles are mismatched. The spatial phase is broken. When those two helices come together, the barcodes clash.
Positively charged domains are forced against positively charged domains.
Exactly, maximizing electrostatic repulsion and preventing the tweezers from aligning.
It is a brilliant biophysical mechanism, but you know, it immediately raises a question about physiological relevance in the real world.
How so?
Well, if the thermodynamic floppiness of a mere 68 base pair fragment is enough to shatter this alignment, how does this microscopic force function in the reality of a living cell? I mean, chromosomes are millions of base pairs long.
It's a great point. But contextualizing this within the cellular environment actually resolves that apparent contradiction. We must account for macromolecular crowding.
Right, the inside of a cell isn't a watery soup.
Not at all. The interior of an E. coli cell, for example, is densely packed with proteins, RNA, and highly condensed DNA. The concentration of DNA base pairs in E. coli is roughly 10 millimolar.
The excluded volume effect in a space that dense means the molecules are constantly physically pressed against each other. It forces the strands into close proximity.
Exactly. Furthermore, while the total cellular magnesium is high, the concentration of free, unbound magnesium floating in the cytoplasm is tightly regulated to about 1 millimolar.
Because the vast majority of it is already clinging to the nucleic acid backbones.
Right, so the crowded cellular environment inherently provides the tight spatial confinement and the necessary divalication shielding that the researchers engineered into those tweezers.
Oh, I see. So the long chromosomal DNA may be flexible globally, but locally, the extreme crowding constantly mashes short segments together.
Yes, and because they are confined, the entropic penalty of bringing them close is already paid by the cellular architecture. That tiny 1% electrostatic barcode whisper doesn't have to pull the strands across long distances. It only has to make them stick together momentarily when they naturally collide.
That makes so much sense. It's just enough to hold matching strands together long enough for the repair proteins to arrive.
Exactly. That transient stabilization, a microscopic pause during a collision, is the crucial first step. It holds the homologous regions in spatial register just long enough for the RAKI-A or RAD51 protein machinery to arrive, recognize the paused alignment, and initiate the actual strand invasion and repair.
It serves as a rapid pre-sorting algorithm for the genome. Of course, translating an isolated physical measurement into a holistic cellular model requires acknowledging the limitations of the current data.
Yeah, absolutely. The use of short, 36 base pair, rigid DNA segments was absolutely essential to isolate and quantify the electrostatic interaction free of confounding entropic variables.
Right, they had to simplify it to measure it.
They did. But inside the cell, the macrodynamics of a massive supercoiled chromosome involve complex torsional stresses, topological constraints, and constant interactions with histone-like proteins. DNA is incredibly long and flexible in vivo.
So further research is really needed to see how twisting and bending affect this barcode alignment in vivo.
Precisely. How this delicate barcode alignment navigates the bending and looping of chromatin architecture remains an open frontier for investigation.
The structural physics are proven, but the systems biology requires deeper exploration. So to distill all this complexity, synthesizing the mechanical engineering of the tweezers, the biophysics of helical coherence theory, and the crowded realities of the cell, what is the ultimate takeaway from this research?
We now possess direct, quantified proof that intact double-stranded DNA can physically recognize matching sequences through microscopic sequence-dependent electrostatic patterns, completely independent of protein mediation.
Mm-hmm.
This remarkably weak sequence-specific attraction provides a foundational biophysical mechanism explaining how the complex process of homologous recombination efficiently locates its targets in the dense environment of the cell.
Incredible. And realizing that sequence information projects an invisible electrostatic field outside the helix leaves us with a fascinating engineering prompt for you, the listener. What does this mean for the future of genetic medicine? Could we one day engineer our own synthetic, programmable DNA tweezers that navigate the cell simply by feeling for these invisible electrostatic barcodes, hunting for specific genetic motifs without ever needing to unzip the genome? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now, stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
No enzymes, no guiding star. Just spirals breathing in measured time, listening for a match in the charge line. A whisper of ions in the groove in the frame. Patterns line up like they remember a name. Close enough to feel, too small to see. A gentle pull where it shouldn't be. Hold on. Strands in line from first contact.